The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Between the Synapse with Mark Tobin. If you're looking to learn something useful, you've come to the wrong place. But as Belushi once said, it don't cost nothing. So let's get things started. Here's Mark Tobin.
Hi, I'm Mark Tobin, your host on Between the Synapse. In light of the recent tragedy in Charleston, South Carolina, I decided to scrap my originally scheduled program and focus in on this tragedy. And while I understand that it just occurred and many facts are yet to be learned, I thought that it is still worth pursuing today because of the important subject matters that this tragedy brings up. You know, our country is once again faced with this tragic reality of a mass murder, a hate crime committed with a gun. And those facts we know. No doubt, the next few days will be focused on discussing the issues of race, access to guns, and the criminal justice system, considering that the alleged shooter had been in and out of the criminal justice system in South Carolina prior to this occurrence. So I thought it was worth discussing, and we'll be doing that on the show. I've invited some people to call in, and I invite you to call in with your thoughts on any of these matters. Please do so. The number here is 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. By the way, a little housekeeping. You can check out previous podcasts for Between the Synapse radio show at my blog at betweenthesynapse.com. And you can also check me out on Twitter at BetweenTSynapse. And you can sign up on the blog to receive notices of future shows right there on the right side of the page. Just put in your name and email. Before we get started, of course, you know, my heartfelt prayers and condolences go out to the families and the community of the victims of Charleston's historic Emmanuel AME Church. Three of the victims were males, six were females, according to officials. The Reverend Clementa Pinckney, the church pastor, and a South Carolina state senator was among the dead. Apparently, three people have survived the shooting. The details about them are not apparent. A person has been apprehended in North Carolina. There was surveillance of him entering the church. Dylan Roof, who is in his young 20s, is apparently the alleged gunman. And he is responsible for, according to authorities, to killing the nine people in this historic church. Late last night, there was a prayer service that I think is a regular occurrence. According to reports, if you haven't read about it so far, he entered and appeared to be kind of observing the prayer service. And after some period of time, what's been reported is about an hour or so, he opened fire and then fled the scene and was apprehended in North Carolina and surrendered to police and is in custody. And that is all we know, other than the fact that Dylan Roof had been arrested twice, once, I think, for trespassing, and that had been resolved. He was paying out a penalty, and there was a drug charge that was pending. And there's pictures all over the internet about where you can see both his mugshots and as well as some other pictures of Dylan Roof. But this is another tragic time in our nation's long line of tragic shootings where multiple people have been killed by just some anonymous person for reasons that often are not all that clear. And because of the availability of the weapon, that person is able to inflict very, very serious casualties. According to reports, this is the worst religious kind of attack since the attack on the Sikh facility, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. We have a caller from Houston, Alexandra. Alexandra's on the line. How are you?
Yes, hello?
Yes. Yeah, you're on the line?
Hi. Yeah, my name is Alexandra, and I volunteer with the group Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America.
All right. And what is that?
Our organization works to end gun violence, the epidemic of gun violence in America. And so, as I heard you mentioning just a second ago, we believe these kind of tragedies are entirely preventable. Whereas I am calling in as a listener right now, this is something I think all of us have seen before. We have seen it before, and I just thought I'd share some of my feelings anyway on how these tragedies are, entirely preventable, even though they keep happening so often in this nation.
Yeah, please do.
I think it's not obvious, it becomes obvious every time one of these horrific events happens that, one of the plainest truths I think exists in this nation is that the easy access to guns makes, let's say in this example, makes hate easy. If we are, I think this nation is an outlier in terms of how easy we make it for people with ill intent, in this case, somebody who appears to have been, racially motivated in doing his horrible act. It basically facilitates these horrible acts, and we believe that this, and I personally also believe that this is entirely preventable, and we need to stop having, so much violence, start acting, through our votes and through our voices to bring in better laws, better common sense laws to make sure that individuals who have ill intent, including individuals like this one, who appears not to have hidden his intentions that well, to make sure these types of people can't get a gun.
All right. Well, let's start. First of all, I've not read anything in terms about the type of weapon he's used. Have you found anything about that?
I can't say. I mean, it's widely known that his weapon was a gun. I think the situation is still unfolding, so I can't comment to that. Whereas it was a gun, I think we can still, with reasonable certainty tie this, because we've had so many similar incidents where, some of our most vulnerable citizens, minorities in this case, as it appears to be at this point, or young children or otherwise, when we see these tragedies unfolding, I don't think it's much of a leap of logic to say that if you have a nation in which it's a firearm, easy access to firearms, legally in some cases, where there aren't enough background checks performed, or illegally, where we don't, do enough to make sure private sales have background checks on them, then you're going to have tragedies like these happen over and over and over again.
All right, so let's, obviously we don't, there's a lot we don't know yet, but if you could, say, implement some of the kinds of laws or preventative kinds of actions that you're talking about, say they were already in place, how do you think that they could have possibly, and there's no 100% of anything, but how could they have helped possibly prevent something like this from occurring?
Well, I think you said it. You know, it's impossible to say at this point because the tragedy, the details of the tragedy are still unfolding. So it's impossible, you know, to venture a hypothetical statement at this point. But one thing that, as an activist, I feel very strongly about is the fact that, you know, up to 40% of all gun transactions in the United States are private sales, for example, which are not subjected to federal background checks. And because we know background checks do work at keeping guns out of the hands of unsafe individuals, then, you know, from our standpoint, it's why are we not doing more to expand these background checks to make sure more unsafe individuals aren't getting their hands on a gun? And, you know, taking a look at what those background checks cover as well, I think would go very far in helping us reduce these types of horrific tragedies.
And you said that there was information about the shooter or alleged shooter that, you know, could have had laws been present, you know, might have prevented him from acquiring a weapon.
Yeah, well, that, you know, that I'd like to clarify that that's from my own personal observation. You know, when we see on the news, for example, that this, there were photos available of this individual wearing insignia that, you know, suggests that he was a person who had hateful intentions in mind. To me, now I'm speaking personally as well, you know, to me what that suggests is there's this person, you know, perhaps this person had people around him or her who understood what kind of individual this was. So I think cultural awareness as well in speaking about, you know, when and where it's appropriate for individuals to have a gun, from a personal standpoint, I think, you know, this is a good time to talk about that because it's good to change our laws, but I think we also have to change the way we think, you know, about what responsible gun ownership means.
And by the way, and that's what it's about. It's about responsible gun ownership. It's not about denying people the right to own or use guns. And that's where I think that.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, and that's where I think the discussion goes off the tracks. It's nobody wants to take away everybody's guns. It's, you know, certainly, in at least my opinion, there are certain weapons that don't serve any purpose for personal use. But, you know, it's a matter of ensuring gun responsibility, and just like you know, the government insures responsible drivers, and they insure responsible pilots, and they insure, you know, responsible people who perform all kinds of people who perform actions that have the potential to maim or kill people. You know, guns certainly fall into that same category, and yet, you know, there's this whole thing of, you know, don't do anything because, oh, it's a slippery slope. Well,
yeah, and if I can just interject, you know, we're actually not the only nation where gun ownership is permitted. But we're, you know, there are several nations which have coupled gun ownership with much better laws to ensuring that these type of tragedies happen at a much, 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 much lower rate. The United States is an outlier in that fact. You know, I don't think we have any more or fewer individuals with ill intent than any other nation. But what we do have is some of the loosest
There may be people that would debate that, but do you mind? We got to take a break. I want to ask you one more question. Can you stick around?
Sure.
All right, we got to take a break. So please stay with us on Between the Sit-Ups.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com. There are over 140 million products manufactured worldwide. It is impossible to know the ingredients in these products, especially those made overseas. Stan Salat, creator of the HSF Mark and the Counterfeit Mark Alliance, is the host of People to People, working together for your safety. Stan believes in our right to know the type and amount of hazardous materials in consumer products and whether they are counterfeit. Find out how you can protect yourself every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Variety. Tune into the Voice America Variety channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
What can you find on Get Real Radio? Well, quite honestly, who you really are. Join host James Robinson each week for a program designed to reveal more about yourself and your world through words of wisdom and profound guests. You'll discover more about the spiritual movement and how it can work with you and alert you to problems you may not be aware of. It will educate, titillate, and enlighten your mind. Get Real Radio is broadcast live every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. This could end up being the best time of your week.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to mbt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at @BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
All right, we are back on Between the Synapse. I'm your host, Mark Tobin. We are talking about the tragedy at the Charleston Emmanuel AME Church, which happened last night, in which the lives of nine people, including the Reverend Clemente Pinckney, the pastor and senator from the state of South Carolina, were taken allegedly by Dylan Roof, a gunman in his early 20s. And currently we are talking to Alexandra, who is with Alexandra, it's Moms for
the organization. I'm a volunteer, and I'm okay. With Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America.
Okay, I get all that. Long name though. you know, that's just from a marketing perspective, but nonetheless, yeah. Important work. We have another caller holding, so I just want to ask you one more question.
Mm-hmm.
The alleged shooter, you know, had been arrested twice, had pled guilty to a trespassing charge, and had a drug charge pending, and it seems that, you know, whether a person has hate in his heart without taking, you know, overt acts is a fairly difficult kind of criteria for determining whether somebody, you know, is qualified to own a gun, right? I mean, you can't, you know, get into what somebody thinks. You can only get into what somebody does, right?
Well, you know, from the work that I've been doing from Moms Demand Action, you know, there are definitely, you know, red flags you can look at with a lot more certainty as to whether an individual might perform, you know, really tragic crimes with a firearm. And previous criminal convictions, I think, deserve to be looked at as red flags.
Right. No, I'm just saying, in terms of whether somebody harbors racial hatred in their heart, without in and of itself, you can't figure that out unless they do something. That's my only point. Whereas if somebody has a conviction or something else, that is obviously something tangible that the law can address in terms of whether they should be qualified to own a weapon. And by the way, we don't know how this person acquired the weapon yet. And so what we're talking about now it may or may not be applicable to the situation. I want to be clear about that.
I agree. You know, I agree with you. And I think, you know, we've always said there's never one easy solution to figuring out the best way to reduce these kinds of tragedies which are inflicted with a firearm. You know, I mean, but we are, you know, certainly I am very much into looking at, you know, things that are based in fact. And if you look at those things, I think you're already, you know, you're already going a long way to slowing down the, you know, the impact of gun violence and the ease with which some individuals can commit these horrible crimes. So, yeah.
All right. Well, listen, we've got another caller we want to get to. So, Alexander, I just want to thank you so much for calling, and good luck with your work.
Thank you very much. Have a
great
day.
Thanks. All right. We've got Michelle also somewhere in Texas. Michelle, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Just so very, very upset about this tragedy that's occurred in Charleston. And I actually agree quite a bit with the last caller. I think one thing that strikes me is these mass shootings occur with such regularity in the United States. And while you're never going to completely prevent them from occurring, we are dramatically out of step with other developed nations. You don't see this going on in Australia or Europe or you know, other developed countries. And it's just pointless to have this degree of human loss. And I think it is a terrorist act.
All right. And I guess the other side says, meaning the other side being those who believe that any kinds of, from their perspective, gun laws restricting gun ownership don't have any application to preventing these kinds of acts, because these acts are performed by people who are, you know, mentally, you know, out of the sphere of ordinary. Well, just to say that. And so, therefore, there's nothing that you can do, because they're going to acquire the weapons regardless. And you know, how do you respond, saying, you know, why punish the, you know, from their perspective, 99.99% of people who do things right, and it's just these crazy people who are going to do things regardless of whatever laws are in place?
Right. Well, it's not 99.9% of people that do things right. I mean, we have 100,000 people that are killed annually by guns. We have nearly 8 children killed every day due to things like negligent storage, or, you know, that turn into a suicide, or,
I'm sorry,
or this, that, and the other. So, I mean, we pay a very, very large toll. And, you know, what you see going on currently with, you know, the gun lobby is active support for people that are, you know, convicted of stalking and things like this that are technically a misdemeanor, but they can still obtain a gun. So I'm not anti-gun. I mean, I'm actually very, very, you know, supportive of the Second Amendment. I just think that, unfortunately, the gun lobby has stopped being the voice of responsible gun ownership. And, you know, this is, you know, one of the worst case scenarios, what's going on in Charleston, you know, where you know, it's motivated by race and so forth. But, you know, this kind of, we've seen it in Newtown. We've seen it, you know, in on army bases. We've seen it with, you know, every day we see something come through of, you know, a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, somebody who's gotten a hold of a gun, some child. The numbers could be much more in line with other developed countries.
All right. Well, what is the let me just step back, because it does happen occasionally in other countries. I mean, you've got the example in it happened in Norway, but that happened once, happened in Scotland. But those typically, they don't have the reoccurrences. And your point is well taken, that in the United States, it is a regular occurrence. It's maybe not monthly, but it certainly is something that's going to happen. We'll go through these probably, 3-4 times a year now,
mm-hmm.
Where we seem to have mass shootings. Some are worse than others, and it's usually, only because something misfired or whatever that prevented the shooter from being more successful than not. In the instance of trying to call out the people who, should or shouldn't have access to weapons, what do you think is the most important aspect in that process?
I think looking at the multiple violent misdemeanors, looking at anything in your record. In this case, this kid had a drug charge pending against him, apparently had fallen an issue with some other, other areas of the law. Looking more liberally at people's criminal records would provide a lot of insight. And I certainly think on the mental health front, it's incredibly difficult to establish that someone is mentally unfit to own a gun. You have to have them involuntarily committed, basically, by a judge. And that's a very tough standard to follow. And I think what you see going on in, say, California, where they recently passed a law that allows a relative to come forward and say, I don't think my family member is fit to obtain a gun. The family member still can protest that and has a fair hearing before a judge to make a case otherwise if it's a disingenuous charge. There's more systems in place in something like that to prevent these kinds of things from happening. Because right now it's at an epidemic level.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, you're from Texas, as am I. Governor Abbott just signed open carry, and I assume that goes into effect September 1st with other laws that were passed
during
this last.
January, actually, I read.
Oh, okay, so it's January. That's right. They changed that, so it's January. So we have a little bit of time. We probably don't know enough, but do you think open carry would have changed this event or any of these other events that have occurred?
Listen, I think it's, again, I am fully supportive of responsible gun ownership. If people want to own a weapon for self-defense, certainly for hunting and sport, I am all in favor of that. But there's no evidence, there's no conclusive evidence that shows something like open carry has worked to prevent crime. There's no empirical evidence to show that. There is actually empirical evidence that shows background checks reduce violent crime and reduce deaths by gun violence and injuries by gun violence. So to me, I view something like open carry as a giant science experiment that they're conducting in, at least in Houston and Dallas, two of the largest cities in the United States.
Well,
I can't imagine after something like what happened in Charleston, walking into, the Houston Galleria or walking into, my local Chili's and encountering something like that and not flipping out.
Yeah, I mean, look, and I suppose at some point it could be helpful, but not initially. And in this case, where you know people are gathered, you know, around in a praying, and somebody, you know, I think he's apparently in the back of the room, just whips out a gun and starts shooting. You know, there's my guess is, and I'm sure we'll learn more, is it would be pointless. And the same in the Aurora Theater,
right?
You know, somebody whips out, you know, this was a semi-automatic or almost automatic weapons, and you know, start shooting while people are watching a movie. It's not like people are, you know, have their fingers ready to whip out their guns, even if they were, you know, had it at, you know, holstered. You're not there. Now, you know, if the person's reloading and then they're running around and, you know, on a secondary level, kind of perhaps, but, you know,
I mean,
then probably the police are there anyway.
It doesn't bear out. I mean, I certainly think businesses have the right to choose if they want to permit people to, you know, carry guns on their property or not. But as just your, you know, average citizen and mom around town, if I were with my kids in a place and I saw someone openly carrying a pistol, I wouldn't know who that person was. I wouldn't know
exactly what
their intention was. And,
you don't know how skilled they are either. You know,
that's right.
You know,
that's absolutely right. And I believe
in
Texas you need 4 hours of training. And it's apparently a commonly discussed joke amongst CHL holders that everyone passes the class. So there's not a very – they just reduce standards for that in Texas. You know, in other places in the nation, I'm not exactly sure. But so I think, you know, I think we've got some issues, and certainly what's going on in Charleston is there's a racial motivation, but this person was able to carry it out in such a deadly way. And that part, you know, I think can be minimized or hopefully even prevented in many cases.
Yeah, and we haven't, you know, we haven't really touched on that, quite frankly, mostly because we don't know at this point a lot about it, certainly. I think there'll be a lot of information forthcoming in terms of, you know, what this person was involved in, and you know what really provoked him to take this action, and you know whether it was just a kind of overall response to the racial tensions that have been, you know, permeating, you know, our country, and there was the issues with the shooting in Charleston, most recently, involving the shooting of a black man by a cop, and whether that played into this, I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
You know, certainly.
I don't think that's come out yet. I think you're right.
Yeah. No. I'm not saying that did or didn't. I'm just saying that did happen in that city. And who knows exactly what caused that? What are you involved in trying to change any of the laws? What's your focus?
Well, I have gotten involved. I have also, like the previous caller, gotten involved with Moms Demand Action, which is a grassroots group. I know there are other groups that work on it as well. I just like, enough is enough. I mean, I'm a praying person. I'm connected to my religious community. It's not enough for me. I cannot stand by and believe that this is acceptable. And, you know, I think, we're in this position because many of us, like myself, have been asleep at the wheel for decades. And I'm waking up, and I'm saying, you know what? I'm not comfortable with this. I don't want people that, you know, have a stalking record or a drug record or multiple violent misdemeanors to be able to obtain a gun. I don't, you know, I think that guns need to be stored safely, and people need to be held accountable if they don't do that. I am taking action through meeting with lawmakers, writing them, you know, letting businesses know how I feel if they have a policy that I'm not comfortable with. And I've gotten very outspoken recently about it, and today just renews that all over again for me.
And how do you measure your success?
Ultimately, well, there are a number of measures. One is I look at what's going on in state legislatures across the country. I think federally we're not there yet. I think our Congress is in such gridlock, they're not able to take action on a lot of things, unfortunately. But in state legislatures, I see us making headway in Texas and around the nation in fighting back things that the NRA is pushing, like campus carry and open carry and domestic violence, access for people with domestic violence convictions to guns. We have pushed back successfully in a lot of those areas. Ultimately, I want to measure it by looking at our gun violence rate and finding it, you know, finding those numbers dropping and seeing us step in line with other developed nations. You know, also other things have occurred, universal background checks, which can't seem to pass even after Newtown on a federal level, are moving. They have passed in Washington State. They have passed in Oregon through popular referendums. And so, you know, I think the nation is waking up to this issue, and it's not going away. It used to fade back after these horrible episodes, and it still seems very much alive in between them, I think, for many more Americans.
And is it, you know, regardless of what it is passes, I mean, if gun shows are excluded, quite frankly, none of this matters. I mean,
well, that's
given
right.
The amount of weapons that are sold
and many gun shows, I believe the way it works is if you're a federally licensed firearm dealer at a gun show, you're still required to run a background check. But there are many private sellers at gun shows, and they're not required to run a background check. And some gun show organizers still require background checks for everyone that participates at their gun shows, which is commendable. Some cities require it. In fact, in Texas, Moms Demand Action, working with legislators, just recently fought back an NRA effort to make it illegal for cities to require background checks on all sales at gun shows on their property. And so those are the kinds of things that may feel more obscure, but those things add up. And you know, this is, it's going to be a marathon. It's not a sprint. The NRA and other more extremist groups like Gun Owners of America have been working on this for decades. And they are more organized, but we're stepping up, and we're you know, presenting some formidable opposition. And you know, I can tell you right now what happened in Charleston. It just as President Obama said, you know, that these things are preventable. They do not have to occur with this kind of regularity.
No, you're absolutely correct. And I guess the only sad note is how many more will have to occur before we get to a point where we're surprised and by their occurrence, and not look at it as, oh, this just happened again.
That's right.
Michelle, we got to take a break, but I want to thank you so much for calling. And like the previous caller, I want to wish you good luck in this good work.
Thank you, and thanks for having this discussion.
Certainly. All right, we'll be right back on Between the Synapses.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
How do you achieve the utmost success in your life, career, faith, relationships, and more? It's all here in The Business of Living with host Scott Ventrella. Scott has experience as an executive coach, sought-after speaker, and lecturer. He and his guests will offer practical solutions and strategies to help you move to the next level of success, no matter where you are in your life and career. The Business of Living airs live every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
American Heroes Network is a program for and about our American veteran heroes and their families. Join host Gary Ray as he shows what is being done to help our veterans and showcase the companies and organizations that are helping our veterans and their families rebuild their lives. Listen for American Heroes Network, live and powered by the Voice America Variety Channel, every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you are listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Between the Synapse with your host, Mark Tobin. If you want in on this week's discussion, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to mvt@betweenthesynapse.com or on Twitter at @BetweenTSynapse. Now, back to the show.
All right. We are back on Between the Synapse. We're talking about the tragedy in Charleston, South Carolina, at the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church, wherein 9 people, 3 men, 6 women, were killed last night, allegedly by a 20-something Dylan Storm, who attended a prayer service as an observer for roughly an hour, and at some point pulled out a weapon and proceeded to shoot approximately 12 or 13 people, fatally shooting 9 of them, including the pastor, Reverend Clementa Pinckney, who is also a long-serving member of the South Carolina State Senate. And I, by the way, I just want to thank our previous callers for taking time to call the show and share their thoughts on this this tragedy and their ideas on what can be done to prevent some more ones in the future. If you've got any thoughts, there's still time to call the show. 866-472-5788. You can also tweet at BetweenTSynapse. And don't forget to check out my blog at BetweenTheSynapse.com, where you can sign up for notices for future shows, and also check out previous podcasts for the previous 59 shows. So, you know, it's just, it really is so hard to understand for anybody, regardless of what side you are on of this, you know, gun debate, what motivates somebody. And I guess, Dylan, they're listing his age at 21. You know, what would motivate a 21-year-old to actually go in, sit in this church, a place of God, and be part of their prayer service for almost an hour, and then just whip out a weapon and start shooting? What was in his brain? What was in his heart? How did this person get to the point that they were motivated to perform this heinous act on people who presumably he had never had any personal contact with. You know, look, all forms of murder are horrible. Yet some perhaps are at least more understandable. Doesn't make it easier to deal with for those who knew or families of the victim. I'm not trying to discriminate between the sense of loss. All I'm trying to do is have a sense of understanding. If there is a argument or if there's been bad blood between people or, you know, something transpires or there's a criminal act that is being committed and something happens or whatever, at least there's an understanding. But in instances like this, it is so difficult to really understand what was in the head of the person firing those bullets. And it's that lack of understanding that we always have to be aware of when we allow people the ease of access to the kinds of weapons that can cause the damage that he has done, not just to the nine victims, but to their families and to this community. You know, it's why we have laws. And I understand that the whole anti-gun law movement has been cast as an anti-government movement and a pro-Second Amendment movement. And the Second Amendment has essentially been so perverted in its understanding by those who seek not to have any form of restrictions on so-called gun ownership. What we need in this country is responsible usage and ownership of guns. Part of that is to perform every reasonable effort we can to keep guns out of the hands of people who we can determine should not have them. And every time that there have been these kinds of mass shootings, and my guess is when all the facts are uncovered, that we'll be able to say the same thing about Dylann Roof, that there were so many red flags about the shooter that it would not have taken a rocket science scientist to determine that this person should not have had legal access to guns. Now, I understand that people will always try to do things illegally, and that is true. It doesn't mean that we have to make things easy for people. There can still be roadblocks so that people who shouldn't have access to tools to where they can cause mass casualties, that they can do that easily. And that's what we're talking about in this situation. We're not talking about taking away people's ability to hunt. We're not taking away people's ability to reasonably defend themselves. And there are a lot of other issues that are going to become apparent, as they always are, when we have these kinds of things. And we're going to talk about them for a few days, and then, just like every other issue, they're just going to disappear until it happens again, and then again, and then again. But like both of the callers said, at some point we have to say enough. We have to say enough and figure out a way that we can at least limit access. We can limit our exposure. We can save kids who are being killed every single day in gun accidents. And so these are things that we can do. We can do these things without limiting people's rights, without limiting people's ability to go hunting, without limiting people's ability to defend themselves. But we have to be able to have a reasonable debate. And we're not able to do that in this country still. Yes, it's a little bit better than it was. But there's still a very, very long road to go. And so, you know, as I said at the top of the show, my thoughts and prayers are with the victims and with the community of the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church and with the city of Charleston. And all those who mourn the victims. This will not be an easy recovery, but nonetheless, I do wish them strength, and I do wish that they have the ability to eventually find solace and peace with this tragedy. Just a couple other points before we close. In terms of some other things in the news, switching gears real quick, NBA playoffs are finally over, and all I can say is I guess that's a good thing. Congratulations to the Warriors. LeBron did play one hell of a series, but what would you expect from anybody but the greatest basketball player in the world? I still wish that he would understand just how to be a better it's a better teammate or a better sportsman. But for every good thing that he does on the court, he seems to say things that subtract from it. And he is a great basketball player. In my opinion, he's not Michael Jordan, and never will be, but that's okay. There can only be one Michael Jordan. And, the fact that he had to score so many points was always a bad sign for Cleveland because they just didn't have anybody else to do it. You know, there's been a lot of comment that the Warriors have been one of the great teams of all time. I disagree with that. I thought that they had a great season. They're a great champion, but they were not playing the best basketball that they could have toward the end of the season or towards the end of the playoffs, and that's how you really grade a team is how do they play in the finals. And they were not playing their best basketball at the time, but they played well enough to win. And so congratulations to them. Well, that's it for Between the Synapse. Once again, my thoughts and prayers to the people in Charleston, South Carolina. Thanks for listening on Between the Synapse. I will talk to you next week. Take care.
Thanks again for joining us this week. Mark Tobin and Between the Synapse will transmit once again next Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. And remember, you never know what lies between the synapse.